Our cover has a plain white background. Hello and welcome to the WIP, the What If podcast that's a work in progress. We are the only podcast that dares to ask, what if Wonder Man got lost? I suppose he'd be Wonder Man. Hello. I am your host, as always, the irrepressible, the Slim James. You know, last week I happened to stumble upon the fact that apparently legendary comic artist Klaus Janson was appearing at Casablanca Comics. Now, I mean that as no slight to him, it's just, you know, outside of your, like, A-list comic creators, I tend to become, you know, a little oblivious to who's done what in the comic world. Casablanca Comics is pretty much one half to one third of the comic book scene in Maine, with our limited number of actual comic book stores, and the fact that they have two locations. The Portland store, not Wyndham, which is where this signing was, is small but still packs in treasures such as hordes of graphic novels new and old, independent publications by local creators, or some swag in the form of statues, posters, and glassware. Their back issue selection is usually of the nicer variety, which can be a double-edged sword. Sure, you can find something that's probably more worth owning, especially things from the 70s that are a little bit rarer, but you miss out on those quarter bin finds or some of the ridiculous schlock you find hiding in the 25-cent to $1 range. For instance, I'm working on a Age of Apocalypse collection of all the single issues, and you can usually find those in the a buck or under bin. But they do have a nice store, friendly staff, and they often bring in artists for meet and greets, such as the aforementioned Klaus Janson. Klaus worked on a bunch of things over the years as an artist and inker, including Daredevil during Frank Miller's run, Wolverine, some Batman stuff, and a lot of others. And of note for this podcast, several issues of What If. I may have had one of the more obscure issues pulled for him to sign, a copy of Black Panther number 3. Volume 3, number 4, I forget what it was. Either way, the first appearance of the latest incarnation of the Black Knight. Now, that's because I've collected all the first appearances of the Black Knight, but we'll save that for another podcast down the line. So, one of the what-ifs I had him sign was, what if Volume 1, Issue 3, what if the Avengers had never been? In doing this, Klaus Janson was a lovely chap to meet. Very humble, willing to talk about anything to the fans. Someone was there asking him questions. He might have worked for the store to help sort of facilitate some of the conversation about inking and collaborating on comic books. There was some guy ahead of me geeking out something fierce about the Dark Knight Returns. He was like, "Oh, it's a you got to take a. Can I show you this? It's my favorite panel. Such a moment. Put it back in your pants, buddy. You know you're an adult." That said, in order to make idle chit chat, I told him that I collected all of the Marvel What Ifs. And he said, "Oh, really?" But you could tell he meant, "Really?" Like, he was a little incredulous that I'd collect such schlock. But here we are. I'm podcasting about it. So when I put Volume 1, Issue 3 on the table, he said to me, "Someone was asking me about this. I don't get it." To which I replied, "You know, if you think about any of this too hard, ... And he replied, "That is true." So when we're talking about these wacky back issues, just remember, don't think about this too hard, or else it all comes apart. So what didn't Klaus get? Let us examine What If Volume 1, Number 3, What If the Avengers Had Never Been? First off, I swear I'm not making this up. I'm not seeing things that aren't there. But continuing a trend I've noticed, our cover has a plain white background with lots of red and blue popping off the page. Though we do get some yellow, thanks to Iron Man, and some green and purple, thanks to Submariner and the Hulk. So there's a little more variety of color on this one, but still just the plain white background hanging out there. Since I mentioned the inker, Klaus Janson, who signed this issue for me, I figured I'd also mention that the writer of this issue was Jim Shooter, and the penciler was Gil Kane. Right off the bat, I'll tell you, I do like the pencils in this book. It's got some good art. So per the norm, the Watcher opens, introducing himself and the Avengers, Iron Man, Thor, Hulk, Giant Man, who's there in his ridiculous Giant Man garb with his pointy blue gloves and his superfluous antennae, and the Wasp. And they banded together to thwart the mischievous Loki. So our story begins with the events in Avengers number 2. The Hulk, who was in one of his semi-coherent stages, not quite bah, he quits the Avengers because he's the strongest there is, that pig-headed oaf. After explaining that in Avengers 2 they went off to find the Hulk, we see in this reality Hulk leaving caused the team to splinter. Thor gets cheeky with them, saying things like, "Unhand me, mortal," and "Mayhap the son of Odin was not meant to battle alongside mortal allies." Very fanciful. And Giant Man goes the other way. Being around Thor and the Hulk made him realize, and I quote, "Being 12 feet tall isn't all that great of a power." You said it, Hank. He retires from Herodom, taking the Will-less Wasp with him, because at this point she doesn't have her own brain. So Iron Man tries to find the Hulk, so he meets up with Rick Jones, who's busting out the ham radio. So hey, it's the 70s. That's a thing. And Iron Man finds the Hulk and promptly gets beat down. So after that brouhaha, Hulk meets up with Namor, and Namor challenges Iron Man and the non-existent Avengers to a fight to the death at the Rock of Gibraltar. And facing a 2-on-1 beatdown, Tony Stark does the only thing he can. Drink. No, actually, he does his other hobby. Besides alcoholism, he builds more Iron Man suits, which I'd just like to point out is like a multi-billion dollar a day habit. You know, you divert all these resources from your company, all these malleable metals and all the software and hardware that goes into designing it, and you end up with just building billion-dollar pieces of military-grade equipment for fun, but I digress. Iron Man calls Rick Jones, Henry Pym, and Janet Van Dyne to be his new Iron Avengers, because those are the only three people he knows. Walking in, Henry Pym refers to the fact that they aren't heroes anymore, they've retired, and he calls Janet an airhead heiress right to her face. Janet, to her defense, the next thing she says is that the Wasp suit Iron Man furnishes her will clash with her eyeshadow. Sexism. Rick Jones tries to fly in his suit by flapping his arms. Idiot. Have you seen Iron Man do anything? He doesn't flap his arms. Nobody in the existence of humanity has flapped their arms. He's not a flying squirrel. There's nothing on his arms to indicate that he would fly. Rick Jones is being an idiot. And Iron Man gets gruff with all of them because they all suck at being Iron Man. And I don't really blame him at this point. Goons. But they all leave. So Iron Man, with no other option, overcharges his suit. And unlike a cell phone, it doesn't power off. It double charges and gives him superpowers. And he flies off. And he meets up with the Hulk, manages to electrocute him in a tidal pool, which produces a nice, cool splash page, which you don't really see a lot in the older comics, but it's a full-page splash right in the middle, and it's very cool. But Iron Man does look a little menacing in it, but it's still, you know, not bad. Like I said, I like the pencils in this book. Iron Man finally knocks out the Hulk, but bam, second encore, it's Namor, the Submariner. And Namor, as he's off to do, takes the battle underwater. Iron Man didn't even have his cool gold Hydro armor on. That's a shout out to my Marvel Action Hour derived Iron Man action figures. Thank you. With the gold, and he had the bubble helmet. It was pretty cool. Of the superfluous Iron Man armors, that one has actually showed up in the show, and I think the comic books too. So mad props to my Hydro armor Iron Man. Iron Man gets knocked out of the water with an underwater uppercut by Namor, and knocked out completely. But no fear, the Iron Avengers strike right in the nick of time. Wasp stings Namor with some poison darts or tiny things. It's just weird that Iron Man would build a tiny suit of armor for the Wasp. You'd think that he would try to accentuate her strengths and have her be full-sized. Giant Iron Man, Iron Giant? Nah, how about Giant Man? I like that better. He smushes Hulk with a rock. Smush. Meanwhile, Namor is recovering in the water. But after getting smushed with a rock, the Hulk hulks up, brother. And he's Giant Iron Man, Giant Man, the Iron Giant. He gives him a shellacking. And in doing so, the Hulk says, "The Hulk never gets tired. I only get stronger, brother." Which, you know, he doesn't say brother, but it gets me thinking, what about Hulk in Hulk Hogan voice, you know? "Well, let me tell you something, Rick Jones. Hulk smash, dude." But I digress. So after he hulks up, Hulk knocks out Giant Man. I don't know if he gives him a leg drop. And Giant Iron Man's armor powers off, meaning he can't draw a breath, as concluded by Tony Stark. Which brings up the question, why doesn't this happen more often? It either Iron Man's suit powers off and he should get smothered, or more realistically, maybe that's not the right word, more expectedly, the armor would just be sort of an exoskeleton that holds its shape around him and wouldn't collapse onto itself even more. In order to save him, Iron Man gives Giant Iron Man some juice to keep him from asphyxiating, but in doing so, it takes him straight back from past normal to being Super Giant Man, and he smashes the Hulk one more time. And Namor, while all this is going on, is battling Iron Rick Jones, and this fact pisses Hulk off, and they brawl into the water, so the Avengers get the count-out victory. A little after that anticlimax, we see that Iron Man charging up Giant Man had caused the technology he uses to protect his heart to turn off. So we end with the sad heroic sacrifice of Iron Man to power up the Avengers and abate this threat of the Hulk and Namor the Submariner. And the three of them standing there, Giant Iron Man, Iron Rick Jones, and Wasp, it seems like they might say they're forming the three-man Iron Avengers team. Or not, you know. Eh, they're going to need some more people, because, quite frankly, who's your heroic leader? Giant Man? Yeah. But overall, I thought this story actually wasn't that bad, at least thematically. Iron Man has his back to the wall, and he steps up and proves himself to be a hero multiple times in this issue. He realizes that he's released this threat of the Hulk on the world, and he has to be the one to take it down, no matter what it takes. And in the end, he ends up sacrificing himself. So it shows that he's committed to this heroic concept. And you can just kill him off, because it is a what-if. So it's one of those what-if tropes, death of a hero. It has a very long battle to conclude the issue, but it kind of felt epic. It was back and forth, swings and momentum. But there was an anti-climax to the battle where the Hulk and the Submariner just sort of fought each other off into the distance. The Iron Avengers concept itself was kind of cheesy, and the character designs of the Iron Avengers were a little bland. They're just different colored Iron Man suits, and they're blue and white, purple, and the Rick Jones one is green. It's just sort of multicolored Iron Men. Now, the concept of the Iron Avengers actually showed up in the Earth-X series that came up in 1999, I think. I might look at those somewhere down the line. Overall, I'd have to say to Klaus Janson, what's not to get? This was a good issue of What If, in my estimation. Good art and good story. So, moving on. So, in case you hadn't noticed, this week's theme tends to be the Avengers. Now, I'll probably hold off on discussing the Avengers movie until I have somebody in studio with me, as that's sort of a landmark moment in the ongoing adaptation of superheroes to pop culture. I will say that, you know, I did like the Avengers movie, so spoiler alert on that. But I will take the opportunity now to discuss the Avengers cartoon that was out a couple years ago, Earth's Mightiest Heroes. I will say that I really like this cartoon, and if I was a kid, I'd have been super pumped to watch this. Adapting the Avengers to a cartoon can be sort of like opening a Pandora's box of potential characters, since just about every character in the Marvel Universe has been an Avenger at some point, or been, you know, featured in a crossover. I will say that I'm happy that this cartoon touched on a bunch of different storylines. Red Hulk, Ant-Man and the various iterations. I think Dr. Claw was there, the Black Panther and all his stuff. I recently watched an episode with the Michael Korvac saga, and that featured crossover from the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a subject for another podcast entirely. But I will say that that is actually one of my favorite cartoons to pop on Netflix when nobody's around, and I can just sort of have that playing in the background. So our next issue for this podcast is What If Volume 2, Number 5. What if the Vision had destroyed the Avengers? Plus, what if Wonder Man hadn't died? Starting off, I'll say the cover is garishly ugly. The Vision and Wonder Man fighting each other with their red and green and yellow outfits. Oh man, it looks like a runaway Christmas sweater. The issue itself starts off with the Watcher recapping Wonder Man's origin. He was bad, then good, then bad, then good again, and then he died, saving Thor, and/or had radiation poisoning. after which his brain patterns, whatever that means, were the basis for Vision as created by Ultron, who was created by Hank Pym. So I guess that makes Hank Pym Vision's grandfather and or Wonder Man's great uncle. I don't know. So eventually, Wundermensch, as I like to call him, the German Wonder Man, he's not quite Superman, but he's not Uber, but he is wonderful. He gets better and becomes like the black and red mulleted Wonder Man that you see in the late 80s, early 90s, hanging around the West Coast Avengers. But part one of this what if asks, what if he hadn't died in the first place? So in this reality, Wonder Man stays good. He doesn't turn again, so he's able to get cured of the radiation poisoning that's afflicting him. And he stays with the Avengers. And eventually they have some roster turnover, as the Avengers are prone to do. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver join, who, as I always note, they are the hottest superhero properties on the planet. And I have a feeling they're going to be disappointing on both fronts. But that's just my skepticism. We already know that the Days of Futures Past Quicksilver will look like crap, and it'll just be way overdone. He'll probably be like a Japanese gangster or something, or the punk kids who, like, you know, have glow sticks. I'm sure he's just gonna be whipping out glow sticks. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver join the Avengers, and Quicksilver gets jealous because Wonder Man's moving in on his girl, i.e. his sister. They love each other. Just do it already. Admit it. Wonder Man offers to join them for dinner and I quote, make it a threesome. So they're not making any bones about it. It's gross. Oh, after all this, Wonder Man, in the upset, ends up leading the Avengers after Captain America takes a leave of absence. Yeah, you can tell this is an alternate reality because no way is Wonder Man ever leading anything. Wonder Man's new power miffs Quicksilver, so he allies with his father. I think he knows it's his father. The, you know, they got the hair going, the pointy white hair. So you can tell it's genetic. But he allies with Magneto and attacks the Avengers, dressed as the Grim Reaper. Oh, man. And then in a climatic battle, Quicksilver ends up sacrificing himself. Well, I say climatic. It's the climax of part one. In this climatic part one battle, Quicksilver ends up sacrificing himself to save the Scarlet Witch, because he loves her. Get a room. And in the end, Wundermensch ends up marrying the Scarlet Witch. So there's our big happy ending for part one. But oh, man. Part 2 is our titular what if Vision had destroyed the Avengers. So in this same reality, since Wonder Man didn't die, it's not Wonder Man's brainwaves that Ultron puts into the Vision, it's his own. He's Ultimate Ultron, as he proclaims himself. So Vistron, maybe ColecoVision, I don't know, Ultron Vision, Visiontron, lulls the Avengers into a false sense of security, and then bam, he strikes, wrecking the entire team in a matter of panels, including hilariously swatting the Wasp out of midair, like the bug she is. And, you know, Hank Pym's like, Jan! He's just, whap! You know, he should have just sprayed her with, like, Raid or something. But wait, Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor, the A-team of the Avengers, and if they're the A-team, I guess that makes Thor Mr. T, he pities thine fools, obviously, they attack, and Wonder Man joins the fracas, as does a recovered Scarlet Witch. Ultron, he likes smacking some women, so he smacks down Scarlet Witch, and Wundermensch is uber pissed. He's, you know, rah, 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 but then we also get the heroic return of Ant-Man? I ask the question, what are you going to do, Ant-Man? Be small at him? Ah, tiny. Wonder Man is going crazy. Says he's going to rip Vision's heart out with his bare hands. But oh man, turnabout is fair play. And the Vision phases into Wonder Man's chest and might grab his heart. It's just, he does that thing where Vision phases into people and knocks them loopy. So then, meanwhile, Ant-Man and a swarm of conveniently flying ants attack Vision, and Pym slips in Vision's mouth, gross, goes up to the Vision's brain while he's not phased, and pulls his, quote, main synapse, which fries Vision Ultron's brain. You know, comic book logic. There's the one wire, pull it. But after the Vision, Ultron Vision, Ultimate Ultron, whatever you want to call him, after he is defeated, we find that Wonder Man has died from Vision's phasing attack. And then we end up with another sort of one of the what if selection of endings. It turns out that the story turns out the same way anyway. And we end as Wonder Man's brain patterns are transplanted into the Vision's body, and the cosmic balance is restored once again. That's our comic book in a nutshell. And overall, I'd say, I have it written down, the tale. It's a tale of two halves. So part one's a little wordy, because it has to lay out all the background, not only explaining Vision's origin, but also Wonder Man's origin. It's a sort of a twofer, and sort of the climax of it. It's a little... It fizzles out, but that's because it's only part one. Part two is a lot of action strung right together. You know, it's like there's several pages with like only four panels, big panels with a lot of action, and Vision Ultron's just smacking people left and right. Taken as a whole, the story itself isn't too bad. It feels a little disjointed being separated into two chunks like this. And Wonder Man's red and green attire, combined with the Vision's red and green and yellow attire, just makes the whole thing a little visually jarring. Like, if Wonder Man did stick around to lead the Avengers, he probably would have gotten a costume redesign, maybe the black and red that we see later, because, oh man, red and green Wonder Man is just ugly and not befitting someone named Wonder Man. Now, thinking about this, we got Ant-Man, and we got Vision, and we got Ultron. This could be, you know, some fodder for, like, Avengers 3 once we introduce Ant-Man with his Paul Rudd movie, and Vision and Ultron in Age of Ultron. I'm not calling it, but maybe look out for some of these events phasing into the chest. Maybe introduce a character as Wonder Man somewhere along the ways. I'm just saying, they could drop on something like this as sort of deep source material to make sure everybody doesn't see it coming from a mile away. But that's just my theory. And one last quick note, there are no ads in the body of this comic. There's some, you know, the inside cover and the back cover, but no ads in the middle. Nothing, not even for a subscription to Marvel Comics. So, I will say this. My, how times have changed. Signing off, remember to follow me on Twitter at TheSlimJames, the website, TheSlimJames.com, YouTube.com/TheSlimJames. The What If podcast is on iTunes, Stitcher, and the videos are on Vimeo too, so go out there and find us. And remember, don't spend the rest of your life asking, what if?